Welcome everybody back to Weekly Wings or Wings, a dronelife.com podcast. We are bringing you the latest news, innovation, insights into the UAS industry and things tech related and overlapping the UAS space. As always, Terry Neff is with me, Paul Rossi. We are your hosts during the next hour or so, and we appreciate you tuning in and giving us your time and attention. As we are recording this episode of Weekly Wings, we are watching live as the SpaceX Dragon capsule has touched back down here on Earth after a crew has been on board orbiting the Earth for the past couple days. Well, Terry, you have not been orbiting the Earth in a Dragon capsule. You have been alive for the past few days. And we have been alive for the past month. We just haven't been able to get on here as we would have liked to. But how are you doing, Terry?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little tired today, but it's not going to stop me from having a good episode here. Something I'd like to note for these the SpaceX people here, there is no dress code. I see one guy's wearing, there's two dudes wearing fedoras or top hats. They look like fedoras, though.
Pilgrim hats. Over here?
Yeah, over on the left.
Pretty classy looking hats, though. So you've been well, you've been good?
Been pretty good.
Pretty sweet view right here. Dragon capsule. They're going to lift this up and get the capsule onto the back of the boat. It's been crazy. I keep looking down here and it's like, are these sharks? Like I look down and I swear when it first touched down, I was like, it just looked like there was like a giant whale just kind of circling out there. I'm not a marine biologist, but it's kind of like drones in the sky. Or airplanes in the sky, you know, and you zoom back, you're like, yeah, there's a real the likelihood of, you know, seeing an airplane. It's like with the number of whales that actually exist, what's the likelihood of zooming into like a square mile? What would be the population density of like whales in a square mile? But anyway.
That's a good question.
We'll leave that for ChatGPT to answer. So it's been an exciting month of March. I would just say I finished up my master's degree in space operations. So that definitely consumed a bit more time than I really would have imagined. But hey, if you're going to get a master's degree, it shouldn't take no time at all. But yeah, I got that over with, and I swear I'd don't want to go back to school again, even though I decided to get back in the airplane. And so last week on my birthday, I actually got in an airplane, a small four-seat airplane, and went up and did some flying. And it was kind of like riding a bike. So pretty excited. Going to try to get back into the whole aviation thing and build some hours. So I won't be starting. I guess what I'm trying to say, Terry, is I'm not going to be getting into jiu-jitsu anytime soon.
I mean, you don't have to. It's not for the weak.
I know. I stick to the flying for the weak, you know?
Yeah.
For the rich.
Yeah.
But what's funny is as I've been coaching T-ball for my oldest son, he's been every day he comes home, he just wants to go to the batting cage. We live close to the high school, so we can just go right up to the high school. They've got two different batting cages, so he just loves to hit the balls off the tee. But now I've got my glove back on and I'm getting outside. Pollen's everywhere. It sucks in North Carolina. But I put my information out to like the softball grown-up adult league, and this guy reached out, and I was supposed to meet up with him yesterday, to possibly play on his team, but I got a text from him saying, oh, I picked a kid up from jiu-jitsu practice, and I think he's pretty sick.
No and, way that actually happened.
Yeah, and I was like,
see, oh, maybe if you were doing jiu-jitsu, you would have got picked, Paul. I mean,
jiu-jitsu. Well, I didn't say I didn't get picked to be on the team. But what you're saying is maybe I would have bumped into this guy earlier. Maybe I need to get my kid into jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Get him in there. Hopefully he doesn't break an arm, you know. I'm sure your rotator cuff's feeling good after playing baseball with him a little bit.
No, actually, right now, funny, neck strain. So for the last 2 days, I've had the worst stiff neck, you know, just like it's been terrible. It's been pretty bad. March 26th, though, you know what happened on March 26th? Here's the drone pilot. Do we see that?
Yeah, that's got to be him. There's two of them, it looks like.
Right here.
The classic look up, where's the drone at?
Yeah. Because I was kind of wondering before, like, where would the drone pilot be? They've got to be. Yeah, that's totally the. That's pretty cool.
I wonder what drone they're using for this. Oh, that dude just jumped into the water.
And this dude looks like he has maybe just like a handheld camera or something, taking some photos. Oh, this has to be a Mavic 3.
Wonder what the other boat's doing, just circling them, making sure no pirates come by and rob them.
So when you think about the steps here, as we're watching just the live recovery of the Fram 2 crew that returned to Earth, touchdown, I don't know, 15 minutes ago.
Wait, there's people in this?
Oh, there's four people in there.
They're just jerking them around.
Just, that's what I was going to say. Once you touch down, like these, like here you come blasting back into Earth, you know, thousands of miles an hour. You survive the reentry. Then you got these parachutes that blast off. And so it's like, you know, you're surviving the impact of the deployment of the parachute. And then that thing hits the water. And so now you've just done 3 days in space and confined area. And now for the last 20, 30 minutes, they've just been sitting in the bobbing water. And oh man,
they go straight into seasickness, and then they get put into a roller coaster with these guys. Just
I'd have thrown up for sure. Yeah, this is like it's totally like getting into the shadow or something. I don't know. Is that we're probably totally wrong. Well, if you want to start that, he's yawning. This guy's over here yawning. He's like, I mean,
he's had a long day, Paul. You got to give him a break.
The guy looks like he actually looks from this angle like Matt. God, I can't remember his last name. Who worked for us up in
Blackwell?
Yeah, Matt Blackwell. He looks just like Matt Blackwell. If you tried to make your D-pin antennas in America, they're going to cost 3 to 4 to 5 times as much, and there's no way you're going to get, you know, people who are crypto folks and you know, early adopters, they're not going to buy $4,000 antennas in order to make a little bit of money. You got to be able to make that thing for the cheap. So,
well, I mean, it's making it for cheap, and then there's exactly zero other places to go for it, more or less. I mean, I think Taiwan controls like what, like 94% of the semiconductor share of the world. Like they produce 94% of them. So, I mean, China wants Taiwan too.
It's wild. And so we've talked, as we're just kind of, you know, watching here, it's neat. Again, I'm just fascinated with these people getting out of here. One thing they're going to do with this capsule as they get out is they're not going to assist them. They're basically testing to find out, hey, can they just get out on their own? And I mean, if they need help, they'll help them. But a lot of what they're going to do, just the little things that you can test, because you don't launch all the time. You're not, you know, landing humans back. But anyway, remember the Japan UAS Industrial Development Association?
Yes.
So we're always talking about the JUADA and how they've really really pushing limits, right? So Toyota Group tests level 4 drone deliveries in remote Japanese islands. I think this is just interesting because it's, right, Toyota and this Juada, as it popped up, I'm like, they're pretty much doing anything to drive that Japanese UAS industry forward. But how, it's just so interesting how everything's happening. All these things are happening everywhere with all these different drones and systems, and people are doing it, but it's just so hard to know, like, who can scale this, who can provide that aircraft, not just here in Japan, but also here in another country. And that's what so much of this, you know, trade and all this, you know, don't even talk about stocks right now and you know, people's portfolios. But you get a company like a Boeing, and that they're getting dragged in into the, you know, their CEOs being brought in to testify in front of Congress and stuff because of all these accidents that they've had. And it's like you get to a point where you're doing great and you're employing a lot, but then you're held to such this high accountability and standard. And so you see like the Japan UAS Industrial Development Association, and I don't know, it's just interesting because as I finished my master's degree, you got these countries that get behind like the whole country, it's not big. And so you can get like a more collective backing. The problem is you don't have the same resources and funding that a large country has. So the United States, you know, we're huge. We've got, you know, resources. We don't have all the resources, but we have a lot. But then the problem is things become divided capitalistically through that capitalist framework, that you have the government like the FAA and they're supporting projects. And then now in drone delivery, they're supporting and working with 5 different companies in all these different spaces. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, Terry, how countries, small countries are kind of unified, but they don't really have a whole lot to leverage.
That's why they got to unify. I don't really have anything to note on that. I do have something to note on the
do you want to go to Europe?
The medicine.
Yeah, go ahead.
The drone delivery with the medicine to the older folks of the Goto Islands. Good job. Get them their medicine fast. I'm sure it's a remote island or just off the coast of Japan, so I'm sure it's kind of hard to get stuff over there.
And so that's the other thing is you have these very the US is a developed place. So I always thought about this back to like instant gratification with drone delivery and small items versus the healthcare initiatives, you know, the using drones in instances like this, where maybe you have to draw someone's blood immediately and you got to get it back to shore. And so they're on this boat, they might not have the lab or the test equipment. So how can you get samples, specimens, you know, life-saving stuff? And that's not what the priority is in the United States. But Juada, man, they'll keep doing it. And then did you sign up for that Defense Daily newsletter?
God, no. I don't sign up for newsletters.
No?
No.
It's no news? Nah.
It's just a bunch of, depending on what newsletter it is, it's usually trash. Except DroneLife.com. DroneLife.com has a great newsletter.
They do.
They do have a great newsletter.
They have a good newsletter. But if you're like Terry and you just bookmark the homepage and you're visiting it hourly, you really don't even need the newsletter, do you?
My eyes always on the website.
So they're going to try to get out of here, but the next couple things, it just seems like Andural, Army, Andural, secret space satellite, U.S. green lights, small drones.
We unusual machines. I've seen something about them. Let's see.
I did meet someone from Ondas Holdings.
Did?
Yes. In Virginia, the drone responders event that took place in March.
Okay. You want to dive into that? Or?
So this lady was there in order to... She was part of like acquisition, finding hardware, software companies that Ondas Holdings could, you know, acquire. And I think it had to do with like Flock Safety, because like a big thing is Flock Safety was there. And Flock Safety had their drone in the box, and Flock Safety was just a, or Aerodome had just been, has, you know, was recently acquired by Flock Safety. And so they're this big, just like, all this is happening with the software side. So I'm like, oh, wow, that's interesting. This person is here in Virginia at this drone responders conference trying to find a software or hardware company that needs, you know, capital investment and needs a structure. And I'm like, yeah, that, maybe that's the problem is, again, we talked about it, is like you go back to that VC, you take on a bunch of money in order to do something that you're saying you could do. And then if you can only fulfill half or 50%, you're not going to be able to recover the full, you know, initial investment. And so it's just this very scary thing where people can show a great website and they can wrap a product. And someone can go in and inject funding into it, but it doesn't mean it's going to be successful. And the whole way on trying to find out is a lot of people are going to, you know, pay, buy something. It's pretty awesome. They were freaking out too, and they were watching, we're seeing the four astronauts here, or the FRAM-2 mission. They're about to get out.
They have space blankets? Were they cold?
And so, one thing that was interesting, there was this video where they went, and as they were orbiting Earth, they looked down, and there's the video, it's just clear as day. They can see the spaceport at, I think it was Canaveral, where they launched. Florida, they could clear as day. They could see the launch pad where they had rocketed off from. Like, could you imagine being that high in the air? And then like a day later, you look down and you're like, oh, there's the rocket pad that we were on.
We're going back. We're going to hit it square.
Like, you know, you take off from an airport, you kind of, you go up, you do a 180, you're circling back, you're leaving, you know, Las Vegas, or you're leaving New York, and you're like, oh wow, that's where I was, like 200 miles in the air. Oh wow, that's where I was.
They must have good eyesight. Couldn't be me. I struggle to read letters on a piece of paper 5 feet away from me with glasses on, so.
So, and this person was like, did say, like, oh, what brings you here to this conference? Like, you know, why would this is what I'm saying. Why would this person be here? Because like, this is not a drone pilot, right? Like, it's a first responders conference. I work for Ondas Holdings. I'm like, this, what? Like, did this person really say that? Because it just didn't, I don't know. It just didn't make sense. It reminded me that the industry isn't that big if this person's looking for something here. Again, drone responders conference in Virginia. Great for first responders, public safety. If you're listening and you don't know about drone responders, check out drone responders. Here we go. This person's getting out with their own strength.
Well, you say that, but wouldn't they want to go to the smaller conventions to find like new and up and coming companies that they can poach before they get too big?
That is true. And so then this person's like, I'm with Ondas Holdings, and I'm like, no shit. You know what I mean? Like,
you jumped up and down and you said, I'm your biggest fan.
No, not at all. No, dude, the stock was like tanked. This was like a couple weeks ago.
It's not her fault.
And so I'm like, oh, I know Ondas. She's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm a shareholder. I'm very familiar. I mean, we're literally like deep in the down. And I was just like, oh, that's cool. That's neat. And whatever. He's like, well, we're doing something with General so-and-so. And look at, they're like watching this person labor to get this bag out on her own.
So not only do you have to get out of the space shuttle by yourself, but you have to do it in this crusty suit.
Dude, and they're probably like cheer. They're like, no, don't say anything. Cause they're like, you don't want to like cheer them. Cause it's like, no, they have to do it with their own motivation. You can't motivate them.
He's hitting his head cause the helmet's too big.
This is awesome though. I mean, that's like, cause you got to think if you come back and there's no one there, what would happen? Germany.
I don't. Their spacesuits are too Star Trek-ish. Like the way the frame is of them.
Have you seen the Space Force outfits?
No.
No, you've never seen. I Space Force has been around for quite some time now, and I never realized that they wore Star Trek outfits. The buttons are all angled and everything.
Theirs look good compared to this space suit, though, in my opinion. They look like they're about to cook up a nasty meal is what they're about to do.
The Space Force people or these people?
SpaceX. They look like they're about to cook some good food. They look like they're wearing a chef outfit.
Dude, that thing can imagine trying to get out of one of these things in like a well, the other thing is this is an intravehicular spacesuit. You definitely aren't gonna go outside the spacecraft with that on. I don't think so.
The first person was the guinea pig for everybody else that comes out. See how that guy kinda like sat down and then like
just kinda rolled out. I was like, yeah, I just got here. Okay, it's like, all right, Australia. I think that's what he was.
Oh,
like,
he was Australian? He looked Australian.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the flag there. Could have been something else from the region. And so a couple other things here. Anduril's Fury hopes to woo Australia away from Boeing's ghost bat. So as Boeing is, like I even mentioned just earlier, they're taking some hits with their platforms and aircraft. And now you've got Anduril's Fury. So we've talked about Anduril. We have talked about Anduril in the past. They have, and we're going to talk about, and there's another article if we get to it. But this here is their Fury drone. So this is like, you know... Hey, they've been making smaller drones, lower margins, and now it's like, well, why don't we make a drone to compete with Boeing? Why don't we, produce something? And so you've got the MQ-28 Ghost Bat, which must be like the most latest iteration of, your Predator, your Reaper, your 28s. And so I thought this was really crazy to see because everybody's like, oh, why doesn't Boeing make one of these? Why doesn't, Tesla make a drone? And it's like, how long is it going to be until these drone companies start making drones? And so this was seen outside the US in, I believe it was Australia. And so they're trying to get the Australian Air Force to buy these things.
Well, it's... So these are like drones that just kind of follow, like fighter jets. So the drone's going to have to keep up with the, what is it, the F-47, I think I read in the article. Like, they're going to have to do a demo flight with the F-47 to see if it keeps up with it. So I think Boeing might have them beat there, respectfully. I don't know if Andrel has it in them just yet.
Yeah. And so this is what we've looked at in the past. This article came out in March. Anduril and Zone 5 technologies advance for Air Force DIU Enterprise Test Vehicle. And I don't know if you remember seeing this, Terry. They had that switchblade-looking drone that they actually won a contract for.
Anduril?
Yeah.
Gee, I mean, I'm on their website.
I'll bring their...
is it the Roadrunner?
Could be. But this Barracuda is their latest one. And so, yeah, let's just go to their website, Anduril
Industries. They're always popping out something new. You got to stay on their website 24/7, too.
We'll talk about contracts. This is what somebody was saying, is that these companies, like, it's amazing how, like, companies aren't even, like, companies. They don't even make anything. The whole company exists with just a team of engineers, and all they do, like, when you look at the the Roadrunner, no, it was the Ghost and the Fury. Yeah, this Ghost. Remember this?
The one that looks like a grasshopper?
Oh, we got the Japanese astronaut. He didn't even stop and wave to the camera. They just pushed his, come on. We got one more. The crew. They're like, yes. Oh, last of the parts. Oh, put the bag back in. They're like, it was like a test bag. This doesn't even, you guys made us lift that out. Going back here.
Are they making them lift bags out?
They did. Like, I think just for like, just see their strength. This right here is the military was operating this, which to me, it just looks like a, it looks like it can do the job, but those tiny little legs and the size of it to be able to get that out in the field, little wanky. And then there was the...
it looks like it breaks.
Well, here's their Fury. Man, that thing is, yeah. And the Barracuda, this is their... Now that looks like launch this? Oh, dude, that's launched out of a... This thing looks like it's launched off an aircraft. Totally.
Oh, yeah, it's like a cruise missile.
Barracuda is a family of air-breathing autonomous air vehicles, purpose-built for hyperscale production and mass employment.
Air-breathing?
That thing's massive, right? You totally attach this thing to like a helicopter or you attach it to the, I bet you it integrates right into the Viper. Is that what the hell they called it? We're going to blow your head off.
All of Anduril's products looks like they come straight out of G.I. Joe. So, like, there's no, like, video of the Fury flying on their website, and everything else has, like, a video of it flying.
And this is their video. It's like a cartoon, just like you said.
I mean, as long as they're impressing the Australian government, I guess they're doing it right. But they also did say that in the article that it should be cheaper than the MK-28.
It almost looks like you could mount this to, like, a... like right to an aircraft or like launch it, like have like a, it's so funny. That's the video or like shoot it off of a damn aircraft, like a boat or a, you know what I mean? Like a war, what do they call it? Battleship.
Warship.
Battleship. Like that looks like it shoots. It could shoot out of a torpedo tube or something, whatever.
Maybe like a slingshot. I don't see where a slingshot would hook up, though. It is interesting. That person in the video needs to clean up their sleeves.
See, and they have these underwater things. We talked about this, too, in the past, I think. They're Anduril, but it looks like you could launch, you could, like, load one of these into a tube in here and, like, deploy it from underwater. We're getting super, it's so funny. I feel like in the last year, but they've changed. So I was, and what I was saying is like I was reading an article or I don't remember what it was. It was just saying how like these companies don't have a product. All they do is they just look for the defense contracts. They look for RFQs, requests for information. And they just, you know, one day they're making this and then the next day they're trying to make something else simply because that's what the government wants. Whatever the government wants, that's what they're going to try to make. And that seems like what kind of what Anduril is doing Rocket Motors? Like, was this on here? I feel like we've been on their site recently. And so now they're like, whoa, we'll make your rocket motors.
And they're making rocket motors.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, their website's pretty. I should give them a few contracts.
It makes you wonder, like something like the Fury, like what the heck is powering this? Is this thing have a rocket motor in it?
I think it's either Anduril's a big scam company or they're a lot more advanced than we think.
Dude, this is a single engine jet. The Viper?
Are you looking at the
Fury. This Fury. This Fury, it's a jet engine. And so they're manufacturing their jet engine, most likely. And now they're saying, well, you know, we'll sell you a rocket motor too. It's kind of cool. They're hiring, Terry.
They're hiring. I just called them a scam company. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be even looked at.
792 jobs. Avionics Tech in Atlanta, Georgia. I would qualify for that Av Tech job. I'll see you in Atlanta.
All right.
Totally kidding. Wow, that's crazy. They have a job for pretty much anything. Wow, that's pretty cool. I don't know. I bet you not even going to look. Not a suggestion. Don't care where they're at on any market. It's probably down.
Yeah, I don't think. Let's talk about the stock market for a second. Not looking good. It's not looking good.
Is that it? Not looking good. And
we got to better pivot before we start to get depressed in this call.
So something I did see that came out, Terry, that I thought was really cool because we talked about this previously was the red tape. Remember, like what was keeping U.S. soldiers from flying drones? Remember that article?
Yeah, I remember that.
And what was it saying?
That they're going to be removing the red tape, so soldiers can start to fly the drones around without have to worry about damaging it.
Yeah, they were like charging them for it. They were trying to like recoup costs if the drones like crashed, and the drones were pretty much gonna crash. And so it seemed like they just didn't want to fly them. Like this Endural stuff, I don't know. There's a teal drone. I'm pretty sure that's a teal, which is made by Red Cat, little R Cat. Their stock way down.
So what did they... So it says... Not as much, but don't worry about it as much. What does that mean? They still going to charge? Do they need a credit card to hold when they're flying it?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's a
card on file.
different rules for losing. Because this is what it says. Like the Army's preparing a new memo for the rules for flying. But then, like, what happens when you lose it? Because most. Unless you're in the military, like you're not, like what would be the most high risk? Like soldiers aren't taking these drones on base to like check the parking lots. We're talking about like you're at the front line and you're flying this drone into enemy territory. Around a mountain, beyond visual line of sight, you might lose connection. It's a piece of junk aircraft. Somebody might jam your signal. Dude, there's so many things that could go wrong. And so the word losing is kind of a great way to explain it. Like, what happens if you lose this thing?
You have to do a full investigation. Yeah, it got shot. Yeah, like what do you want me to tell you?
And this was the one right here. Remember it? This was the article. That tiny little drone that costs like 30 grand, 40 grand, 10 grand. That tiny little drone, you lose it. It's like barely as big as a cell phone.
You find it in your pocket the next day. Damn it. I just got charged and 15 grand.
That was the article, U.S. Army takes on most effective. That's right. It's like the whole joke was the most effective counter drone system was the Army's red tape. And so this had come out back in October. And it's neat to actually see this follow up article of like 5-6 months later. soldier.
What are they doing? Are they just a new memo? Let's see.
Dude, look at this photo right here. I just read this photo. This is an artist rendering. This isn't even an actual soldier flying the drone.
It's AI. Look at his boot. Look at his left boot.
Dude, that is so crazy. That is so... It's so misleading. It's so misleading. That's why if you... I don't have any sock in Red Cat. Nope. You were saying, though, there's a memo, so they're going to rewrite some stuff. If you lose or crash or break a drone, you have to do this full on. Oh, that's what you're saying. They're trying to get rid of these investigations.
Hopefully.
Oh, that's right. They were the Flying Flipples, financial liability investigation of property loss. The soldiers are like, oh, that's just a flipple waiting to happen. An investigation could cost $8,000 to $9,000 just to do the investigation, and the drone costs $10,000, $15,000. So it's like they're considered non-expendable. Anything over $5,000 is considered non-expendable, and so there's no drone. There's no NDAA, DUI, blue drone that exists that costs less than $20,000, $10,000. And so by the amount of value of the drones, they are automatically just considered non-expendable. And so it sounds like that's what they're... they can create an abandonment memo. If a drone... that costs less than $10,000, and if it has non-sensitive items on board, then an abandonment memo can be issued instead of a flipple investigation. And if the drone's below $250,000, then a GS-15, a colonel, a full-bird colonel, can make the call. But anything over $250,000 must be reviewed by a general officer. That's pretty cool. So they're kind of powering it down to the command staff. So instead of putting on these, you know, ridiculous, investigations, it's like, hey, just let the lieutenant colonel make a decision. Let the colonel make a decision. It's smart. It's smart.
Do you trust your people? Do you think they stole it? I mean, like, dude. All right. I want everybody in the military to keep in mind anything under $5,000 is free pickings. So if you can figure out how much it costs.
That's funny.
A little can of ammo here and there ain't going to hurt nobody.
That's pretty funny. So going back, Space Force. Yeah, going back into space, I saw this article back earlier in March, and what this article was discussing is how recently Space Force deployed a payload, and that payload is monitoring a Chinese satellite that is monitoring U.S. satellites.
What?
Yeah.
And they did this secretly? I'm sure China knew. They had to have known.
For several years, the Space Force has had a secretive orbital tool that can gather information on China's own network of sensors that monitor American satellites. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, that is crazy. What is the... Wait, go up a little bit. That was launched on a payload. Northrop Grumman's whatever spacecraft. Okay. these are sensors that can tell whether you're being observed, tracked, targeted, those types of things. I don't understand how throwing up something near it can get that information.
Many American satellites themselves aren't able to tell when they're similarly being watched.
I wonder how many satellites are being watched by another satellite that's been watched by another satellite. I wonder how many of those exist.
This becomes almost comical.
It's satellite inception.
And then on the, so that's cool. I just think Space Force, their suits, as we were talking about, not the coolest.
That's pretty cool, though, sneaking up on China's satellites and just watching them. That's pretty epic. At least we know Space Force does stuff occasionally, you know.
And that's years later, right? They're not telling us, like, same day.
They're up there fighting aliens right now. We just don't know. We'll find out in about 10 years.
Now, staying on that military theme, and we were talking about, these large military drones. The U.S. greenlights a potential $1.96 billion deal, a potential MQ-9B drone deal for Qatar. So, sale would mark the first MQ-9 sale to the Middle East for General Atomics. So, big drone here, right? Now, $1.96 billion, we'll round up a few million and call it a $2 billion contract. Like, how are these people going to get involved in small drones, right? Like we saw that even as it breaks into this, even when there's this huge push for this Ukraine war and how small drones have completely changed the battlefield, but the margins are so slim and the production numbers have to be so high, and then it's like counting ammunition. Whereas, do you want to be making ammunition or do you want to make aircraft? And so these folks are going to continue to focus on building large, high margin, highly effective drones. And I don't think, I don't know why I'm just feel like having to kind of harp on this, because the companies that are doing it now aren't doing it very well, but they didn't, they're not looking at it. They were just looking at it like a piece of tech. They're looking at it the same way, the way they should be, like a computer or a laptop, the way that DJI has done it. Because these companies, these big companies that make millions selling drones in large contracts, they're not going to make a small unmanned aircraft system.
They're too used to getting $2 billion for probably, what is that? What did they say, 8 of them? Is that how many they're buying?
Did it say in there?
I think it said 8. I could be wrong. You probably cover all of Qatar with 8 drones.
As well, I don't know. And then the way that these jet aircraft are just being, automated, it's crazy. That'll be the focus. I don't know if it said the actual number. So you got any story, anything, Terry, that...
I unfortunately do not have anything too cool. We touched on a few different things. Nothing from me, unfortunately.
Nothing. Nothing exciting?
Pepper spray drones in schools.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's interesting. Is it just an FPV drone with pepper spray attached to it? That's crazy. Just a little bear spray.
Yeah,
flashbang grenades. In Texas schools, what's happening in Texas schools that they need flashbangs on drones?
The I saw that, and it's here, I can share that, put that up. I just think it sounds cool and it's a good idea, but from a manufacturing standpoint, from a volume standpoint, like use of drones armed with non-lethal weapons to thwart school shooting. So like, you know, this might be cool as like putting cameras up. So like having these drones and they look like they would work, but like, you know, how effective are they for the cost and the price and the amount that they're going to sell? You know, you're just taking an FPV drone and attaching something to it. And so as a student, you might be scared and it's like, oh, if you try to shoot the school up, this drone's going to fly in and it's going to shoot you and maybe even hit you in the face. And
or hit you with a flashbang. The flashbang idea is pretty cool.
Well, and then people are going to be like, well, now when you go to the school, you need to have a trash can lid with you. Or, you know, how easy does it become to combat something like that? I don't know. I just saw that. I'm like, is that what the industry needs? I think, yeah, that's what we need.
Pepper spray drones are pretty cool, man. I might buy one of those, take it out into the streets of Fayetteville, see what's happening.
The mean streets of Fayetteville. There was a couple other things here that popped up in the success story. Palm Springs Police Department expands their drone program with radar technology. We've talked on the podcast in the past about the company Matrix Space. And so this is a beautiful photo. Totally not a deployment photo. This can't be from the actual department. But you can see one, you know, one facing east, west, north, south. You put these pucks out there, you're going to get 360 degree of radar coverage. But altogether, that pole is probably like $100,000+. And then your effective range. But anyway, the Palm Springs PD, working with Matrix Space, has been able to you know, push forward their DFR program with some waivers for beyond visual line of sight. So shout out to Palm Springs.
Let's go Palm Springs.
If you need a safe place to go, you go to Palm Springs.
Palm Springs sounds safe as is. So they just got safer.
And then you were saying Unusual Machines.
Yeah.
I saw this here, so this looks like this got written up here in Drone Life. Unusual Machines aims to secure U.S. skies with border drone ID technology, something we've talked about in the past. I don't remember the name of the company. They probably bought them.
Yeah, they love buying stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. With its planned acquisition of a leading airspace management company. Gosh, Ondas, why didn't you get it? Oh, so they're using Aloft here. Orlando-based Unusual Machines is supposed to be able to provide government agencies and entities with greater ability to determine the origins of drones. In February, Unusual Machines purchased Aloft for the $14.5 million, 70%, blah, blah, blah. So they're Airbus product. So they're talking about, they're just kind of bragging about how great Aloft is and the number of reports of cartel flights. So they're going to use Aloft's platform with some detection thing is, Aloft is just a software. They need the Matrix Space, right?
Or they need buy somebody that makes something similar
to Matrix Space. They need the antenna. Yeah. But yeah, Unusual Machines trying to stay relevant.
I think they're just making very strategic moves into a certain direction that nobody really knows just yet. They're trying to do something weird. I just can't put my finger on it.
And we're all screwed. I don't know. I didn't wrap my head around. These things happen and we're like, whatever, you know, we'll see where this goes. But last night it was this, or I don't even remember. Was it last night or the Trump tariff train continues? And so this article, kind of just came out. And my biggest thing is like, where did the tariff money go to? Where is the tariff money going to? Where is the tariff money going to? And so that's fine. I kind of understand it. I don't like more expensive things. I want America to be great, and a leader. But what I'm trying to figure out is who gets the tariffs? Whose bank account is that going into? But it seems like a 34% tariff on Chinese imports was essentially put in place, which is going to drive the price of these drones up even further. And they just went up 20-25% in the past 6 months. And so when we look at the cost of the actual drones, they're not like going up this much, but the cost of the drone to say the reseller is going up. So like both people are paying for this, and it's not great, right? It's not great. Person selling it, person buying it, they're all paying more. Where the heck is the money going? So if you want to check out this article, it's got a quote by a guy named Paul Rossi in there. But this is crazy. This is kind of crazy. And so like the stock market is just like an initial, like that's like one thing to watch. Then you got to realize being right there and involved in it. Yeah, there's like 15 different sides to this story. And go ahead.
I can tell you what I think's happening. I don't know if it's like the most intelligent idea of what's happening, but I feel like we're just crashing the stock market to get better interest rates when the Fed refinances. What is it, May? Is that when it is? Next month. So we're just putting a bunch of fucking phantom tariffs up to make the stock market crash. So and then everybody, all the billionaires buy up the cheap stocks, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, and that's the interesting. Like I said, there's like 15, 20, 30 different perspectives. And chances are you're not, like, there's very few people who just have one finger in it. It's usually like you have you want to be pro America. You are selling products that come from China. So like you don't want the product to be expensive, but you don't want America to be ripped off, and you want there to be like an American option, and you want there to, but the person buying it is American too. And so you want Americans to make money. You want Americans to employ Americans, but you also want Americans to be able to buy products that aren't expensive because you don't want to pay an American a lot of money. And so we're talking about how, you know, the cost of living goes up, minimum wage goes up, but the cost of these products go down. So it's like, what's gone up? The cost of when you talk about the cost of living, everybody's buying a ton of cheap shit on Amazon. You can't afford to pay this, you didn't pay this, but your Amazon Prime subscription is buzzing. You know what I mean? So it's like, the cost of energy went up. Oh, the cost of eggs went up. Oh, yeah, but how much is everybody spending on this stuff that doesn't matter and not spending money locally in order to keep these other costs down? And so that's where this is a huge, it's all politics. It all ties back to, you know, costs of energy, cost of living, which is a lot of energy associated with it. Driving, automobiles, insurance, it's crazy. You know, companies can't have high expenses and cheap products. And so, hey, I'm in the United States. I learned years ago I could go make it somewhere else and still sell it in the United States. Why wouldn't I do that? Why the hell wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you make your product in the cheapest place possible? Yeah, outsource your offshore. Go send your production to wherever it's the cheapest to make it. And countries were just dying to say, yeah, we don't have any economy. We don't have any industry. Come make your shoes here. Come make your printers here. Come make your jackets here. Come make anything over here. Do your book publication production over here. Print your paper, print everything. Energy will be cheap. Labor will be cheap. But you're still sending it into the US and selling it for X amount of dollars, and then we have to send our cool fancy products to other countries, and we have to lower and sell it for cheap. But as we wrap up the podcast, the new Nintendo Switch just came out, and I saw an article that said the Nintendo Switch in the US costs $400, but a Nintendo Switch in Japan, it'll cost you $330. And so the only difference between the two units is one is a Japanese language and one's English language. Same goddamn game system. And so there's differences with currency. You know, there's like, hey, currency exchanges. But when you look at it, American, the exchange rate, the same game system is $100 cheaper in Japan. Why? Why? Because they know that they can put the price at $450 and still sell a ton of units. And if they price it cheaper, they won't have enough units to sell. Like Disneyland, the price of the ticket at Disney is super high because if it was cheap, too many people would be able to get in. Too many people could get in. If you lowered the price, the lines would be too long. Disney has to regularly raise their price in order to keep the lines down. You make the same amount of money, but you have less people. It's crazy. You sell it into the US, you can sell it for more because there's more people to buy it from you. And if you sell it for too cheap, you're not going to be able to make enough of them. Stupid. It's crazy. And so I don't know. Short term, it sucks, but like, I'm just glad I'm not retiring this year, or I'm not living off of my 401k or IRA today. Because if I was, I'd be pretty angry. But now I brush my teeth and I just go, oh, you know, Joe Biden fell off a bike and the stock market went up. Donald Trump shows you a chart and the market goes down. So I'm laughing. You know, who's laughing? It's like, you know, Joe Biden could fall asleep and the market goes up. Donald Trump adds a tariff and the market goes down. So everybody's going, no, this doesn't make sense. But What is this going to look like 9 months from now, right? I want to see, what does 2026 look like? That's what we should all care about. We should all be more concerned with 2027 and 2028. And I know today is important, but what's in my wallet today isn't as important as what could be in my wallet 2, 3, 4 years from now.
Yeah, you got to look in the future. Present's not the only thing you have to worry about. If you plan on living past 2 minutes from now, probably would worry about the future a little more.
And that was like an extended cut podcast for the past, because we hit the 1 hour mark, Terry. We were like on the money. And I looked and I saw it. And then I was like, well, let me just steal 7 more minutes of our audience's time. And let's talk a little politics and markets here. So, well, great episode. Another great episode. I'm sure we left some things out. North Carolina is in the process of launching a drone responders working group. So anybody in the state of North Carolina, reach out, comment, ask a question, contact myself, info@910drones.com can tell you, you know, a little bit about that and how public safety needs to get together, especially to speak up and speak out against these kind of bills here in North Carolina. So there should be an event in July for like a North Carolina drone responders And then also Spexy. If you haven't seen this, we should talk about it on the next episode, is Spexy. I think it's like spexy.com or something. If you have a, yeah, check out spexy.com. If you have a DJI Mini 3 or a Mini 4, or maybe it's, it might be a Mini 2 and a Mini 3, you can make money flying Spexagons. So it's kind of like part of this decentralized, you know, D-pin. They're getting into tokens at some point. We'll talk about Spexy on the next episode, but check that out. And be sure to check out dronelife.com. Sign up for the newsletter. It's the only one that Terry is actually signed up for, which means it's very, very important. So we appreciate your time. Appreciate your attention. And as always, look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.